Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Web Sleuths Radio. Thank you all for joining us today. And I'm glad to be here. It's a special edition. Since we couldn't do Sunday night show, we moved it to Tuesday night. Hey, Web Sleuths Radio is brought to you by me. I pay all the bills. Now, if you ever had one of those weeks where things are so bad, so much crap happens, that you think to yourself, self, I think it would be more fun to take out my own gallbladder with an oyster fork than to go through this week again. That's the kind of week I had. With the exception of the placement of the ears on the hippo's head, I was exactly like a hippo wallowing in the mud of self-pity last week, rolling around and wailing, why me? My brakes went out. A couple of days later, my tires shredded on the freeway. The tow truck overheated. The Web Sleuths radio show on Sunday was canceled because lightning started a fire on a power pole. I sprouted hair on my left earlobe. It was a horror movie, but I was living it. Until I brought myself back to reality. You know what smacks me into reality every single time? All I have to do is think about what it would be like to have a child missing. Having a child missing is a bad week, a bad month, a bad year, a bad forever. The thought of not knowing where my baby is stops me cold. It makes me realize no matter what, it could be so much worse. And then I count my blessings. I stop wallowing in the mud. Unfortunately, there are other families out there who do have it worse. Now, no matter what you think about the McCanns and the Cummings family, there are people in both of those families who love Madeline and who love Haley. And these are the two cases we will focus on tonight. I'd like to reiterate something I said on my first show. I use sarcasm and humor when I'm distressed or angry. Sometimes it's really inappropriate. Sometimes it's not. I can't help it. It just flies out of my mouth like a strange tick that I can't control, almost like Tourette's of the funny bone. With that in mind, tonight we welcome Blog Talk Radio's true crime fighter, Levi Page, who has been accused of taking Haley Cummings by someone close to the Cummings family. I am not making it up, but I will try my damnedest to get him to confess to us tonight. Good evening, Levi. How are you?
Hi, Trisha. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, hang tight. We'll get with you in just a second, Levi. Also on the show is criminal profiler Pat Brown. Pat has written a very controversial book about the Madeline McCann case, and we'll be discussing Pat's book, and I'll be asking her some pretty tough questions, but I have no doubt she will certainly be able to answer them. Okay, it's now time for the segment that we all love and wait for every week. What the hell is Casey Anthony doing this time? Let's see. Okay, oh, she got a job offer. That's right. Now, let's face it. She was offered $500,000 to pose nude in Hustler magazine, a magazine that has all the class and decorum of the Snooki from Jersey Shore. Now, I don't want to see Casey Anthony with clothes. Why the hell would I want to see her naked? Okay, Levi, you're a guy. Do you want to see Casey naked or clothed?
Well, I've seen the pictures of her. Remember when they took the Bella Vita tattoo of her back? And she had some pimples or moles or something going on down there. So I think they would need a little airbrushing.
Airbrushing. Okay. Yeah. Pat Brown is here with us. Pat, weigh in. Naked or clothed, Casey Anthony?
Well, I'm going to say this. I don't think she's that bad looking. I've seen her on, you know, especially that last time when she was in, remember when she was in court with a really pretty new hairdo that she was, you know, doing all the little flirty things?
Right.
I had to say, you know, I didn't think she was that unattractive. If I were a guy, I probably would like to see her unclothed. But so would I like to see thousands of other women. So it doesn't matter that it's got Dickie Casey Anthony's head on top of the body. I mean, that's what amazes me. It's a body.
You're exactly right.
I just don't get why it has to be hers.
Kimster, my wonderful, incredible co-host, who really does all of the work, and I soak in all of the glory. Kimster, naked Casey or not? What do you think? Kimster?
Absolutely not. Yuck, gross. I'm not going to say anything more, or I'm going to have to use a ray gun on myself.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, let's get to this Haley. Oh, first of all, Levi, fill us in real quickly about what happened with Casey this week. She has to come back to Florida to serve probation, right?
Yeah, for those fraud charges. Strickland wants her to come back, and Casey's team is saying, Well, she's already served that time in jail, and she served her probation in jail. But Strickland, I guess, is of the opinion that you can't serve probation in jail because probation is served once you're released from jail or when you're sentenced to probation for something. It's what goes on outside of jail when you're free, not inside of jail. So Strickland wants her back, and the defense team is saying no, and they're going to appeal this. And I think today Geraldo Rivera called Judge Stan Strickland a media whore.
Oh, my God. No, he did not.
Pot calling the kettle black.
No, you're kidding, right? Are you serious?
No, he did. He did. He wrote a blog about it today, and he called Strickland a media whore.
Oh, you know what? Geraldo Rivera is somebody I wouldn't want to see naked either, just since we're talking about that. I can't believe it. And first of all, I've never heard of anybody serving probation in prison. I mean, that's just stupid. Pat, weigh in. Is that even logical?
Well, I think they're basically saying she didn't deserve to be in prison all this time. She was, you know, she was unfairly in prison because, after all, we know she's innocent. So she's mm-hmm. already served her probation by being detained for no reason whatsoever. So I think that's where the thinking is supposed to be going. But no, I have never heard of that. What's it going to harm her to be on probation? Because it does, you know, teach her how to be in society.
Well, exactly. It might protect her a little bit.
Oh, yeah, we want that.
Exactly. Okay, so now that we've done our What the Hell is Casey Anthony Doing This Week update, that's all we know, right? We'll find out if she accepts
the... Well, she may go to rehab. That's another development.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Rehab
yeah.
for what? For lying? For being, you know, for killing your child? What? What kind of type of rehab?
Do they have a rehab for that?
I don't think
so. They have a rehab for everything else. Sex addiction.
You get pregnant again. That's the rehab. You get pregnant,
there you go.
And get a second chance.
That's what she's going to do. You know, she's going to get pregnant.
Sure she will.
Absolutely. But I guarantee you she's going to end up like OJ. She'll end up in prison for doing something because her mindset is such that she thinks she can get away with it now.
She'll steal from someone else.
Yeah.
She'll
do something. Okay, let's move on now. We've got a possible kidnapper in our midst here on
Web Sleuth
Radio. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, Web Sleuth Radio, we have Levi Page on here. Levi, you were accused, was it, by... Hank Croslin's private detective, or Misty Croslin's dad's private detective.
No, let me tell you what happened.
What happened?
What happened is that there was a show that was doing a show on the Haley Cummings case, and they were doing a show with an author of a book, and they had Misty Croslin's parents and Misty Croslin's boyfriend on the show.
Let me stop you right there. Misty Croslin is Ronald Croslin's wife, but she was not married to Ronald when... Haley disappeared. She was babysitting Haley when Haley disappeared, and she's kind of the center of everything. She's in jail now on unrelated charges of drug dealing. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, and they were talking on the show. By the way, the theory is from this author of a book that Haley Cummings is alive, and she's been sold into sex slavery, and it was the maternal side of the family that abducted her, and that Misty Croslin is being framed for everything, and that she's basically being railroaded. And they were talking about how good of a babysitter Misty was, and I had called into the show, and I said, well, you know, first of all, the theory that Haley Cummings was taken out of the state of Florida and sold into sex slavery can be debunked once and for all, because literally a day before this show was going to air, First Coast News, and everybody can go to their website, firstcoastnews.com, they had an interview with an FBI agent that's based out of Jacksonville that has worked on the Haley Cummings investigation. And this FBI agent point blank said that there was no evidence that Haley Cummings was taken out of the state of Florida, and said that there was no evidence that Haley was even taken out of Putnam County, Florida, where she went missing, where her family lives. And this whole show was about how she could have been in Kentucky and was sold into sex slavery in Louisville, Kentucky. And this man that was arrested on child pornography charges in Louisville had information regarding her whereabouts. The FBI debunked it. And then I also brought up the fact to Misty Crossland's father that, according to many reports, and I think Art Harris has reported this as well on his website, that there were people that had actually witnessed the day Haley went missing at the bus stop, that Misty Crossland was witnessed hitting and smacking other children at the bus stop. And then there was another incident where people had actually witnessed Misty being abusive to Junior, Haley's younger brother, at a doctor's office, slapping, kicking him, throwing him around, those sort of things. And as soon as I said that, Hank Crossland, Misty's father, had said that, you know, I was just out there for the money and that nothing I said was true. And then apparently they had some people that were in the chat room, and they had said that I was part of a conspiracy to keep Haley alive, and that me and Kim Boccasio, the former attorney for Haley's mother, had Haley. Now, I don't know how that is. I'm in the state of Tennessee, and she's in the state of Florida, but that's what the theory was. And then this person puts out on their website that I am covering up the fact that Haley's alive and that I'm part of what he calls the group, the associates, that are covering up what happened to this child, even though the police in this case declared this a homicide last April, declared this case a homicide investigation, because we have everyone in here lying. We have people even basically saying that she was dead, that she was thrown into water, and there's inconsistent stories. They're failing polygraphs. I think that's reason enough to declare this case a homicide, not a missing child, not a child that was taken out of state, not someone that's being pimped or sold into sex slavery, like the conspiracy theorists claim.
That Pat, weigh in what Levi just said. Basically, Hank Crossland and his buddies accused Levi of kidnapping Haley. And I want to say, Levi, I'm sure you are just rolling in the money from the money you've made off of this. I mean, come on,
yeah.
Folks. You know, Levi and I do not make a ton of money doing this. Believe me, trust me. I could make more money working minimum wage somewhere probably than doing this radio show. So the money thing is
But you're doing it because you're a media whore. So you know.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Exactly. There's always two accusations one gets. You're either a media whore or you're a money grubber making money off of dead kids. And it always amuses me because A, people do have to earn a living. That's, you know, people are working
well,
in the
exactly.
field. They have to earn a living. And two, people like to do things because they actually do care. But, you know, sometimes there are benefits or advantages to being able to do things like go on television, educate, or because it does help a project that you have going or something you think in the future you would like to accomplish. I mean, I always look at it this way. Doctors, we shouldn't pay doctors because, gee, they're just making money off of sick people, you know.
Right.
People have to earn a living. Lawyers have to earn a living. You know, everybody has to earn a living. The police have to earn a living, so they're making money off of crime. I mean, it's just ludicrous. And these people, they always have to throw that out there to try to denigrate people who are out there, you know, with an idea that they don't like. As far as this lovely theory goes, I mean, this is basically the Jose Baez, Casey Anthony kind of crap again, where you have a tremendous amount of evidence, which points in one direction. But because there is some level of proof, and sometimes it can be a real ridiculous level of proof that somebody is looking for, like in the Casey Anthony case, but in Haley's case, there's a little less evidence. That's why nobody's been charged. And since there's that little gray area, they jump in with just any bizarre theory. And what's amazing is, you know, you get a lot of nutters out there. You just got a lot of people who want to go after people and say they did horrible things, you know, when they're totally innocent bystanders, and you know, say they're in the media, or they're like, you know, Levi. I mean, really, what would Levi be doing with this, you know, kind of silly situation? But you know, they can just create the most magnificent story, and then they'll get about hundreds of people coming in to go jump in on it with them, who think it's fun to imagine this thing, or some of these people really believe it, which is really scary. But unfortunately, with the internet, It foments, you know, these kind of ridiculous stories. And, you know, in reality, you know, the people who have, a bit of a brain there don't believe this crap, but yet it is does get crazy out there. And it can get dangerous, too. So, you know, you always hope these people don't, you know, go decide to do something really nutty.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think the problem, too, is it's such an emotional case. I mean, they're all emotional, but when you see somebody like Misty, you know, you just kind of want to wring her neck, you know, for lying. And you know she knows what happened. But then again, you know, maybe she doesn't remember because of the drug use. I don't know. Levi,
well,
oh, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that probably the reason that nobody has been charged in the Haley Cummings case is there's so many characters out there who are nefarious. We have Misty, who's lying. We have Tommy Crossland, who's lying. We have Ronald Cummings, whose behavior has been squirrely from the very beginning. And then we have, you know, Misty's other siblings, who also failed polygraphs and trying to make money off of this case. And then we have Joe Overstreet in Tennessee, who has a checkered background, and there's all sorts of allegations about him. Who do they charge? They probably have a situation where they could probably build a circumstantial case that she's dead, that she's been the victim of murder, and that she's not out there somewhere. But who do they charge when there's so many people? And let's say they do decide to charge someone. Let's say they're going to charge Misty Crossland. What Misty Crossland will point the finger at this person and that person. And I got to say, if I was sitting on a jury and Misty Crossland, with everything that we know about her, I would acquit her because I don't know what happened, and I think that there's a possibility that someone else could have done it, even though I think she knows more, and I think she probably killed the child, in my opinion. And I came to this opinion not long ago when it came out that Misty Crossland was offered complete immunity by the Putnam County Sheriff's Office if she would tell them what happened to Haley and led them to the body. And I thought, there, you know, this woman is not covering for anyone else, because I had always thought that she was either covering for Tommy or for Ronald. And after that, I said, you know what, it is possible that she killed this child.
Mm-hmm.
We know that she had just got off a binge, a party binge, where she had been out partying with a drug dealer in the area. And she was babysitting Haley that night. Isn't it possible that she could have drugged Haley, Haley overdosed, and she woke up and discovered her dead? And that's what I think had happened, and I think that she called someone, and I think who she called was Ronald Cummings. And I think Ronald...
Well, I don't understand, Levi, because then, you know, why would Ronald be so helpful?
Well, I think that, number one, a child died in his home. He's been investigated multiple times by CPS, even before Haley Cummings went missing, and I think that this is a person whose lifestyle of drugs, of abuse, he didn't want this to be found out, and I think that he was going to cover up because he did not want all of...
I don't know where you took that turn, Levi, because I don't know where you took that turn, because, you know, we know he's lying on the... you know, he's calling
well, I think
her.
I think he's involved. I think he fed the body to the alley.
He's got to have that involvement, some level of involvement, more than, because he's the kind of guy to beat the living crap out of her and go, oh, she killed my kid. We've discussed this so many times. He's got to have some level of involvement. Either her, his drugs.
Well, what if he was on? What if you know, Misty was on the phone with him, Pat, and she said, you know what, I'm tired. I don't want to watch the kids, and he said, give the kids something, and Misty did, and he knew about that, and he's covering
that
up.
He has had that level of involvement for him to have been so you know, wanting to marry her, and
I agree,
and, being,
and I think,
you know, being really angry with her. I mean,
I do think he disposed of the body. I think he disposed of the body, because from what I'm hearing, you know, all of Ronald's friends were hunters, and they all knew if you wanted to get rid of something, you threw it in the water, because they were infested with alligators there. And I've even just found out that Ronald Cummings had been known to take deer that were alive and feed those live deer to the alligators, and he would get a kick out of watching
those deer being eaten by alligators.
Yes.
On. Are you serious?
Yes, Ronald and his buddies would do that. They would feed the live deer to the alligators, and they would get a kick out of that. And I think I don't think this is really new, because I think it's been reported that they would like to throw things to the alligators and watch the alligators come up and eat this piece of meat. So I definitely think that Ronald Cummings was involved in
disposing of the body. The thing is, they're not going to give total immunity to the person who – committed the outright murder of somebody just to find a body, they're going to give total immunity. Immunity because you were involved in some way and you're going to rat somebody else out. Yes, that I believe. And if they feel that Ronald had more involvement in this and he had more control over Misty, I could see them saying, look, you know where the body is, and I know that you were under his control, so show us where the body is and we'll give you immunity. That would be the more likely story. Otherwise,
I had thought that in the past, but why didn't she take them up on the offer? I mean, this is someone that's not loyal to Ronald. I mean, she was out there having an affair with someone else.
Yeah, I don't think she's loyal to Ron either. The only logical reason that she wouldn't take absolute immunity is that she didn't want anyone to know that she killed Haley. That, to me, logically, that would be it.
She was involved in some way.
Right. But that's, who knows?
Again, why would the police give total immunity to a murderer? I mean, they don't do that. They don't go around saying, we think you murdered your wife. Why don't you show them what your wife's body are and we'll let you go. Just so we can find a body so we can have a burial. We'll let the murderer off completely. I mean, I've never heard of them doing total immunity to the person they believe is the killer. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense to me. I'm sorry.
I agree. Maybe they were operating under the theory that she was covering for someone else. And after this, I think that they've really zeroed in on Misty. I really do, because I think that if she was covering for someone else, she would have ratted them out in a heartbeat. I mean, she's accused Tommy Cross.
Well, then Ronald would have ratted her out. Why didn't he ratted her out?
Because he didn't want to admit that he threw his daughter's body.
Oh, come
to the
on. That's wrong. It's a psychopath. They can just say, hey, look, I don't buy that in a minute. No, that guy's got too much control over that. If he could get something by ratting somebody out, he'd do it.
Levi, how long will Misty Crosland stay in jail? She has to serve what percentage of it? Isn't it like...
She has to serve 80% of 80%. Her prison sentence. And
right.
She's sentenced to 25 years.
Okay. So
she'll be out one day.
Right.
She'll probably be in her mid-30s when she's released. And I probably think that she'll probably be right back in it again. Ronald Cummings is going to be released one day. He got 15 years. And everybody keeps saying, the fact that he got a plea deal means that the police don't think that he was involved. 15 years, he got the same sentence as someone that was declared one of the suspects in the case. Tommy Crosland got a 15-year sentence as well.
Mm-hmm.
So in my opinion, it seems like Ronald was put in the same boat as Tommy Crosland.
Right.
And I would like to see exactly what Ronald Cummings told law enforcement in his proffer to get that plea agreement, because he had to tell them something. They were not going to hand out a plea agreement for the hell of it, because they had everything on tape. They had Ronald on tape with Misty. They had Misty on tape. I mean, it was a slam dunk case. They didn't need Ronald to flip and testify against Misty in the drug case. I think it had to do with Haley Cummings' murder, and I think that it could end up hurting Ronald, because if he lied to them, he could come back to bite him in the butt. And I think they did it to get a story out of Ronald, because Ronald is the, out of all of those, he lawyered up from the very beginning. He refused to cooperate with the police, and everybody can go to the Florida Times Union. There's a quote from Major Gary Bowling, one of the detectives on the Haley Cummings case, and he said Ronald Cummings resisted questioning. I was even on HLN with Terry Shoemaker, Ronald Cummings' attorney, and he said that Ronald would sit down with police. But Ronald will only sit down to police and talk to police if he had his attorney present with him. That's not
mm-hmm.
exactly cooperation. So
right.
I think that Ronald's plea deal, what he told them, is key. And I'd really like to find out what he told them, because I think that, I think that there's something there.
Could that ever be made public? I mean, I guess if he's
not
in
an ongoing investigation. Ongoing investigation. I know that a lot of people are wanting this released and that released, but they've got to understand that this is an investigation where they're looking at more than one person. There's multiple suspects here, and they don't want to release a lot of things to the public, because it gets out to the families of those in prison, and people can change their stories to fix with the facts and this
mm-hmm.
and that. And I think that it's really a good strategy that they're keeping things close to the vest in this case, because they're letting Ronald and Misty and Tommy and all of them just squirm. You know, what do they have against it? What do they have? They don't know, like
don't
the rest
know.
Of us.
Well, I don't foresee in the future anybody being charged. This is one of the cases I have no hope for, and I hope I'm wrong. But we'll have to see. We'll definitely.
Well, you know, everybody is saying just because it's not sharp, it's not solved at the snap of a finger right away. You know, I've seen cases. A woman went missing here in Tennessee, in Nashville. She went missing in 1996. And in 2006, they didn't have a body. They charged her husband, Perry March, who was an attorney, with her murder because they got his father. They were able to put pressure on his father, and they got something out of him. And I think that they, down the road, will be able to put pressure on somebody and get information. And let's remember, they are in jail. And how easy would it be to take one of these drug dealers that's in jail with Misty and Ron and say, you know what, we're going to wire you up. Why don't you go in there and talk to them about what happened to Haley Cummings? And it may happen. I mean, Misty Crossland has been very talkative lately. She's given interviews to a couple of local media outlets. They were it's a snooze fest, because all it was is blah, 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 Misty, and I'm abused, and I was a rape victim. I want you to feel sorry for me. Mm-hmm. But I think that if they... Somewhere down the road, I think that we're going to have movement in this case. I think I really am hopeful that we'll have an arrest made and a prosecution, hopefully in a successful prosecution, because I've seen cases where 10 years later they get the evidence and they get something out of these guys. And look at Aruba. Jorn Vandersloot basically said that he was there at the scene when it happened 3 years later. And a lot of people were saying that was enough to arrest him and charge him with murder, but because of Aruba so corrupt, they didn't do it because of Euron's father's ties in the community. Mm-hmm. So I think in this case, somebody's going to slip up. It may take a while, but they'll slip up.
Oh, I hope you are right. Pat, what do you think? Do you think we'll ever see resolution with this just wild and crazy, sad case?
Well, I do think it will really come down to, well, this is a problem. Unless somebody actually can give a location of Haley's body, and it's not, you know, in a swamp and completely destroyed to the point where that body is never going to be found. I mean, if the body is never going to be found, I just don't think they could ever charge anybody, because nobody believes anybody. I mean, no matter what anybody in that group says, you can't believe them. So it's like, so and-so says, A says person B did it, this person C did it. I would never, if I were on the jury especially, know who to believe. If, on the other hand, there is a body out there and the body will tell us something about what happened to that child, or where, then we start having who could have put the body there, then there might be some hope then that there could be a plea deal, something worked out, or somebody getting immunity. As long as there's something physically, I think, to support who most likely did at least the most major thing.
Right.
Otherwise, I don't see them going to trial with no body.
Could be, Pat, that they're just waiting for a body to be found, or evidence,
right,
of a body, maybe even a bone, and then maybe the pieces of the puzzle will fall in together. Maybe they already know who killed this child. And
they already know,
I have an idea.
Proof.
They're just waiting for that body to come up, and as soon as the body comes up, snap, we'll see a prosecution.
Right.
That may
and
be.
That's pretty likely, Levi. We see that with other cases where you just know. Like, we take a look at the Susan Powell case. I don't think the police are looking at anybody but Josh Powell.
No, absolutely.
I mean,
you're absolutely right.
Not one other person they're looking at. Not saying Josh Powell is guilty of anything, but they're not looking in any other direction. What they're hoping to do is find Susan Powell's body, because unfortunately, in spite of all that stuff pointing in Josh Powell's direction, really there isn't any much evidence to go to court with. And that's the case, I would say, if I were on a jury, I wouldn't be able to convict him, not because I didn't think he did it, but because what do we got?
Right.
Nothing. You know, nothing except for a suspicious wet spot on the floor and the fact that
we
can't be in the
middle
of the night.
I think in this case, what I think will happen, and this is just a prediction, I think that Ronald Cummings is going to give up some information. I mean, he strikes me as someone who's very arrogant, who's very cocky, and I think you get him in there with some other drug dealer, another cocky, arrogant person that has the same sort of personality he is. And if the cops wire this person up, I think, you know, Ronald is going to brag, oh, look what I did, look what me and my girlfriend Misty did and how we fooled the stupid cops and we did this, blah, 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 blah. I think that, that may happen. I mean, he strikes me
that's
as, you know,
good.
A braggart, a cocky, arrogant SOB,
mm-hmm.
and that's a possibility.
I certainly
hope
you're
right.
Yeah,
I would go with you, Levi, on that. I don't know how I mean, he's a pretty wary guy, but like you say, maybe over time he starts getting careless. Because I have seen some people with his behavioral pattern, yeah, they just, it's not that they're going to tell you what happened, but there's little aspects of it that they do like to brag about. Because it shows how much power and control they have over other people, and they like everybody to know that.
And Ronald.
Yeah, I think this is a guy who even, according to what I've heard, had, after his child would be missing, would walk into the room and just brag about what great sex he had with Misty Crossland and all the sexual positions that they had been in. While his daughter is missing, this is what he would do. This
well,
is also a guy.
Himself. That's all, Levi. Just, you know.
Well, this is also a guy that after he would go on the air on Nancy Grace and start bawling, he would then put his microphone down, run off with his redneck buddies, and go mudbogging right after crying on the Nancy Grace show. So this
That's
is a guy who I think is,
yeah.
Absolutely, and I think that the body was fed to those alligators, and I hope that there's a bone or something out there but that would wash up one day, that the alligators didn't digest. And I think it's interesting because one of the Web Sleuths members, who's one of the smartest members on Web Sleuths, Tricia, in the Haley Forum, is LLM Papa.
Mm-hmm.
And he has stated
Absolutely.
That alligators, and I respect his opinion, alligators are dormant or during the winter, that they would not feed on a body. But from what I've heard, that in Putnam County in this area, it's in northwest Florida, not northwest Florida, just I think a couple of hours north of Orlando, around Jacksonville. And what will happen is that one day it will be 35 degrees and the next day it will be 85 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And when the water is cold, the alligators are dormant. And it was probably cold, it was in February, at night when Haley's body was probably dumped into whatever body of water they dumped her into. And I think that what I've heard would happen is that an alligator, if it's cold, will take their prey, whatever it is, and just stuff it in a hole near a rock and stuff
yes.
it somewhere and come back to it when the weather gets warm.
Mm-hmm. If that's what happened, then that's probably, she's obviously already gone, but I think you're right. If they can just get a bone, a piece of something, just
clothing.
To show.
And also, I think that from what I've heard, I don't know if this is, I don't know if this means that someone's guilty or not, but I do know that there was actually a shovel that was found at the home of Misty Crossland's brother, Timmy Crossland, and his wife, Chelsea Crossland, that there was actually a shovel with dirt on it, and the dirt on that shovel did not match any dirt from around the area in which they lived. Now, that could mean many things. It doesn't mean that they had anything to do with Haley, but it is possible that maybe they had helped clean something up and buried something somewhere,
right.
not the body, but something else, and that there's something else that... You know, let's say that there's a shirt with her blood on it buried somewhere.
Right.
That would prove foul play because, you know, if I accidentally cut myself on a shirt, I'm not going to take it and bury the shirt
right.
out there somewhere.
Right, exactly. Well, we'll keep on the Haley Cummings case like we have been for the years. It's just it's very disheartening at times and very, very frustrating. Okay, we're going to move on now. Now, I don't even know where to begin. When I announced that I was going to have criminal profiler Pat Brown on the show to talk about why her book was removed from Amazon, it was a profile of the Madeleine McCann case, I don't even know how to begin to describe it. The people that came out to come and talk to me, some of them were brilliant, wonderful, great people who care about the case deeply. And others were just crazy. I mean, just, I'm scared. I don't want these people around me. And, you know, I'm talking both sides here. I'm not going to say one side or the other. There are factions involved in looking into the Madeleine McCann case that would, you know, frighten Batman. I mean, it's that bizarre. But like I said, I did have a lot of very interesting and incredibly smart input from both sides as well, because I wasn't as up to date on the McCann case as I am on others. And since there hasn't been a lot going on, I haven't really been following it. So I've been kind of doing a crash course thing here. But Pat, first, before we go, just briefly, I want to just describe, in case somebody listening doesn't remember, Madeleine McCann was a child. She was in an apartment in Portugal on vacation with her parents. Her parents went to dinner fairly close to the apartment, but left her and her little brother, I believe, in the apartment when they came back.
Her brother and her sister. Her brother and her sister. Madeleine was 3 years old, kind of closing in on four, and her little brother and sister were 2 years old. They were twins.
And
the McCanns had a habit, plus the other people did as well, and the group of friends that were there, of leaving the children unattended in their vacation apartments while they went over to the bar restaurant to spend a few hours in the evening. And that happened for about 5 days straight.
And when they came back on this particular night, Madeleine was gone. That's the very bare bones of the story. You did a self-published book. It was pulled from Amazon, and we'll get to that in just a second. But the main question that people want me to ask you is about the Madeleine Search Fund. You've mentioned and posted that you're going to donate 50% of your proceeds. What is this search fund? Has it been set up officially? How does it work?
Well, this whole thing went down, I decided I wanted to put some money toward that. Because I'm hoping that there's something that can be done and that nobody has done yet. I've been talking with some people over in Portugal to see what avenues could be taken, because what has not been looked at, and there is a little bit of a joke with that, not about the fund, but about the locations, because I said, you know, the fund is to look in Praia da Luz and in Huelva and in Rothley. What that essentially says is basically that something happened to Madeleine, that I believe something happened to Madeleine in Portugal, that she died in Portugal. I'm not believing that she's in a sex ring like Hayley Cummings. I don't think anybody kidnapped her and put her into a sex ring. I believe she died in Portugal, whether it be in the apartment, as I believe evidence most likely is most likely to support, or whether a predator did get a hold of her. Because, you know, one of the things people seem to understand about theories and profiles is you're looking at evidence and you're saying, which way does the evidence most likely point to? And as if you're working in law enforcement, that's what all detectives do as well. They look at the case and they say, okay, right now we're seeing that the evidence points this direction. They put a bigger effort in that direction than in the other direction. That does not mean the other directions couldn't exist or be true, you see, because you never want to completely close something down. But you're not going to put a huge amount of effort in a direction you think is very unlikely until you've really worked on the direction you think is more likely. So could Madeleine have been kidnapped? Could it have happened? It could have happened. And if a predator did get a hold of Madeleine, it would be somebody local, in my opinion, who would be like all the other poor children who are kidnapped by sex predators. They're dead within an hour or two, and most likely never more than one night. So that's what the sex predator does. He uses a child, and he kills a child. And yet there has really been no focus of finding Madeleine in Praia da Luz in Portugal, the focus of the McCanns has always been that she's somewhere out there in the world alive and 7 years old and running around. And so we're looking for people who wanted a child that could put her in the sex trade, and I just don't believe in that. So, yes, 50% of my funds are – I'm just working on setting this up now.
Okay.
50% are going to do something to see what, if we can uncover any more evidence that nobody's really worked on.
Okay, but you're getting it set up, and then we'll know if you know how people can donate and such. Okay,
right, and
good.
I will. This will be. No, there's no donations on this at this point in time. It's just the book funds. They know, since I'm making some money on this book, and believe me, folks, I'm not making any fortune on this. But since I'm making some money on this book, I want to put some money into trying to do this. I've done pro bono work for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
All my work with the police department has been pro bono and straight out of my own pocket. So one of the things I said originally was, you know, yes, I might make some money on this book, but believe me, some of the money just goes into pro bono work.
Right.
Anyway.
It just, well,
so it's going into, yeah.
Exactly.
But in this
right.
case, I'll put the extra money into, you know, something toward Madeline, if I can, you know, then that's what I'm working on doing.
I'm a little bit differing viewpoint. After the Elizabeth Smart case, and I
mm-hmm.
was very, I live here just outside of Salt Lake City. Angela Reese, the man who was originally arrested, not for the kidnapping, but they said he was the main suspect, and they
right.
violated his parole, and he died in prison. I've become friends with her, so I'm very, you know, I'm very familiar with that case. Ever since the Elizabeth Smart
mm-hmm.
case, I feel that unless there is something that really points to a child being killed, that if we shut down the avenues, if we
yeah.
shut down the avenues,
you know,
of searching, then
yeah,
then we're
but
going
you know
to
what's
be
happened with that.
What?
I hate to say this. I mean, I know where you're coming from. I really do. I don't mean to interrupt with that. But this has been the Elizabeth Smart thing, the J.C. Dugard being found. It's both most wonderful and most disastrous things that's ever happened to missing children. Because, of course, you always want to. If I were a parent, gosh, I'd want to think my child was alive out there someplace, even against the law. I'd want to believe it. Even like Natalie Holloway. Okay, even though, you know, Laura says, you know, she died on the beach. We have no proof Natalie is dead. So people are saying Natalie's in the sex trade. She's somewhere off on a Caribbean island being kept in some kind of, you know, brothel she can't get out of. So Natalie's alive. The problem with this is when you work in law enforcement or do any kind of investigations, you have to be practical because we only have so much money, manpower, resources in the world. And the families, ever since Elizabeth Smart showed up again, have been saying, you have to go after every single avenue possible. You can't leave any stone unturned, as McCanns would say, when in fact the evidence points heavily to 99.9% of the time the child is dead, and especially when the evidence points that direction. You can't go after, like, every, you know, bizarre little teeny possibility that this is the freakiest thing, you know, and the person's going to end up alive. I mean, if that happens, it's wonderful. But I think resource-wise, you can't do it. I mean,
well,
you'd like
yeah.
to do it, but you can't.
Oh, I understand that. And I'm not suggesting that you know,
yeah.
that
you know,
Great Britain or Portugal.
It's also sometimes harmful to the families as well, because I think at some point, you know, it is kind of sad that, you know, every family is being pulled down this trail now. And I mean, there are some families who can realistically say, I think my child is probably not alive. And therefore, I'm not telling families how to feel, but, you know, for some, sometimes it's more useful to be able to know the truth than to sit forever and live in this horrible limbo of trying to believe your child is alive for this, you know, one out of a million chances type of thing. I think it's just kind of almost cruel that way.
Do you have children?
I have three children.
Do you? I mean, wouldn't you want just to hold on to that thought that they were alive? I just couldn't get. I couldn't give up unless there was, like, obvious evidence, like blood, and, you know, and it's apparent.
I think I would do what I've seen some families do.
Mm-hmm.
My brain tells me 99% that my child is dead. My heart tells me just I want the miracle.
Mm-hmm.
But those parents, I find, are also realistic and don't expect unreasonable things from the police department or from other
right.
people, that they shouldn't spend every penny, you know, doing
sure.
a ridiculous search in the world because they wish in their hearts it to be true. Natalie Holloway, I believe, was murdered by Bjorn Vandersloot on that beach. It
mm-hmm.
makes no sense. Take $5 million that could be used to find children who may be able to be found, or spend $5 million catching those predators, because those predators are killing other children. So if we
right.
spend $5 million looking for Natalie alive, we may allow 20 predators to go kill 20 more women. Is that right?
Oh, no, of course not.
That's kind of what I look at it.
Of course not. Let's get to the Amazon situation, and then I want to talk about polygraphs, okay? And Levi,
okay.
I'm not ignoring you, because you are our crime-fighting, you know, blog talk radio host here. Feel free to jump in. I'm not sure how familiar you are with the McCann case, but I would love to hear your opinions as well, okay? So just say, hey, let me say something, you two, all right? Just jump in.
I will.
Okay, thank
I
you.
Will.
Okay.
Levi has never been known not to jump in. Come
That's
on.
True. That's true. But Pat,
we can
between,
count on it. We can
between
count
you
on
and
it.
Me, it's just going to be a yap fest, let's face it. And poor Levi is just going to be, ah. Okay. So you have a self-published book. You've had books published before on Amazon. I was reading on your blog. And when one was published through a publisher, Amazon made you go through an incredibly
Amazon. On Amazon, no.
Who was it?
No, when a book, this is something I have, you know, a lot of people are very, very angry with Amazon. And
mm-hmm.
I actually am not as angry with Amazon as other people are, because I recognize Amazon as a business. And they have the bottom line is making money and not going under, not being sued. So here's the way it has worked in the past with publishing. In the past, nobody published their own book. So, well, if you did, you know, you just got to basically print it up, and then you had a Tupperware party trying to get rid of your books. Yeah, but you didn't, you know, a published book had to go through a publisher, had to be accepted, was edited, they examined it, and before they put that book out, that they had to be comfortable with what they were publishing, because they can get sued.
Mm-hmm.
So when I put out The Profiler, I put out two books. Two books are published through publishers. One is Killing for Sport, and that was published back in 2003. And then this one with Hyperion, The Profiler, My Life Hunting Serial Killers and Psychopaths, that came out in 2010. That one was a lot of work. The other serial killer book, you know, I was talking about just generalities about serial killers, and that wasn't much of an editing issue or a legal issue, so they just kind of looked at it and said, this is fine. But The Profiler had a lot of my casework in it, lots of cases, lots of names, possible suspects, persons of interest, victims. All the names were changed, and I changed the locations, but, you know, it's entirely possible somebody could recognize the case. And actually, I've gotten a few emails where somebody said, I know who you're talking about, this is
okay.
what somebody is, this is my, you know, my friend of mine, blah, blah, blah. And it's always been a positive thing. I haven't got anything negative since the year it's been published. But those lawyers at Hyperion went through that book with a fine-tooth comb. They made me send over all my files, every single one of my files related to these cases, with the police, the names of the police detectives that were on the cases, and exactly where I got all this information. And a lot of people say, oh, you know, she never worked with the police. No, these were most of the good portion of the cases were worked with the police department. And so, you know, they had the information in front of them that it was, you know, this is where I got it from. So if anybody is going to sue, you know, let me put it this way. When Hyperion put it out, they were comfortable with it legally. Therefore, Amazon doesn't feel they have to be responsible. So if anybody comes to Amazon and says, we want to, you know, that book's libelous, they can say, go talk to Hyperion.
Got okay,
so,
understood.
You know, go through Hyperion and Pat Brown, but you know, we're just a seller. We trusted Hyperion to do a job because they're a big publisher, so they're in pretty safe ground. But with self-publishing, you know, there's nobody protecting them.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can put anything out. So consequently, they have to say, can we put this stuff out? With you know, because you know, we could be responsible now because we can't point back and say somebody else should have done their job because there is nobody else. So
understood.
I can sort of see where they're coming from. Yeah.
Right.
So they have to think about business and they don't want to get sued.
Let's talk about the polygraph, okay? And the McCanns and the people they were eating with that night, they have not taken a polygraph. Tell me about that. Have they been asked to take a polygraph? What's the situation?
You know, it's kind of vague. It's interesting, and there somebody might be out there in this in the world of the McCanns. I did not talk about whether they were asked and they refused. I just said they should take them.
Well, here's what I said. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I just want to say something to the people who know this case. What I did in this particular case, I looked at the very basic information for this profile, okay? You mm-hmm. can spend a million years on this case, and some of the people who are very energetic about the case, the ones you have come in contact with, have spent a good portion of their lives studying every aspect of every single piece of information that ever came out on this case. And I have not had that time to do that. What I tried to do was something a little different. What I tried to do is go back to the basics, just to the crime scene itself. Mm-hmm. And not every story out there and every theory out there and every possible connection. I want to step away from that. I'm just going to go back to the crime scene and look at the crime scene. So I mm-hmm. focused heavily on the crime scene. I did not focus on all the other stuff that came after that. So when people say, well, Pat Brown didn't say this, Pat Brown didn't say that, they're correct. I did mm-hmm. not go there because I wanted to focus on the crime scene pretty much alone. So all those answers.
What I found out about the polygraph, because that's the one question that everybody always says, why don't they take a polygraph?
Mm-hmm.
In Europe,
right.
They don't give polygraphs. They don't ask.
Mm-hmm.
They don't ask anybody to take one.
They don't believe in it as much over there. That's correct.
They don't.
That doesn't mean they can't take it.
But now here's the thing. They
so
were
just because
asked,
somebody doesn't ask you to do something doesn't mean you can't do it.
Well, I know, but I don't think it's fair to hold them to a standard when they're not – it's not – just because we do it in the U.S. doesn't mean that they should do it there.
It's not about a standard. It's about it's about trying to clear themselves because they have become they became what's called arguidos. They became suspects. When
right.
we're talking about moving a case forward, one of the things I think Mark Plass says it all the time on Nancy Grace Jane Velez when he's on there. He says a parent, and he should know because he was a suspect right up front with his mm-hmm. with his missing daughter, Holly. He said, you do everything you can to get the focus off of you, to clear your name so they can go look for the other person. Because the family is always looked at first, because we all know that that's most likely people to do in their children and have the proximity to them. So you want to make sure you clear yourself in every way possible so the police go, okay, it's definitely nothing to do with you.
Gosh.
You're showing no signs of trying to obstruct investigation. You're showing no signs of defensiveness. You're not showing any signs of that you're not telling the truth. So, we're comfortable with you. So it's not so much that people necessarily have to ask you to do things,
mm-hmm.
but at this particular point, a lot of people do not believe the McCanns. They do not believe their stories.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the McCanns are telling the truth or not is not the issue. People don't believe it, and most of all, apparently the police detectives didn't believe it, and some of the other detectives working on the case. So when Kate McCann refused to answer the 48 questions after they became suspects,
wait, 48 questions.
Yeah.
What talk to me about
yeah.
that?
Okay.
What
happened was there was a point where they became suspects, where the police said we're suspicious of these people, so they became what's called arguidos. Gives them some rights, and it also makes puts the police obviously looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry came in and Jerry answered the questions, but Kate McCann refused to answer any of the questions. She said, "I will not answer. I will not answer. I will not answer." And when she was asked at the very end, you realize this could obstruct the investigation, she says, you say so, basically. I can't remember her exact words. Yeah, she knew she was obstructing the investigation by not answering the questions.
Okay.
First of all, that's an important point. She obstructed
right.
the investigation. And by leaving Portugal right after that, they obstructed the investigation. So that is not a good way to get the police to look for a stranger abduction when you're obstructing the investigation. Because why do you need to do that? Answer the stupid questions. I mean, if my child disappeared, I may be uncomfortable. I may be unhappy. But if I didn't do anything, you can ask me all the questions you want till the cows come home. I've just got innocent answers. I can just keep telling them to you. So I don't, and you want to do that, you say, I will answer any questions. I'll take a polygraph. I'll do whatever will help you look some other way. They
mm-hmm.
wanted to also do a reconstruction of the crime, bring everybody in there and go through exactly where everybody was, and that's been refused as well. So this continual obstruction because there could be a number of reasons, whether either you're guilty of something or you're angry that the police have the audacity to look your direction when they should be looking for that strange abductor. Well, and that's, of course, what Kate McCann says.
I do think, and this is what I found out, I do think it's important to point out both sides here. And Pat, I want to say I don't know what happened. I honestly, if I had to decide right now,
nobody
I would say
knows, nobody
I have
knows
no clue.
Happened. Nobody
but
knows what happened. I don't know what happened. I don't know either.
Kate was questioned.
And I never said I did.
Oh, I know. Kate was questioned for about 11 hours, and she answered all of those. And she exercised her right to silence on the advice of her lawyer. Her lawyer told her, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And that was after being interviewed for 11 hours. Now, about the reconstruction, I understand they have done a reconstruction, haven't they? It just wasn't in Portugal, if I'm not mistaken. Didn't they
do
a documentary?
It not in Portugal. They needed to do it in Portugal with the police at the location, on the street, at the apartment. That's what the police wanted. The point is, that's what the police wanted. And do it. Do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just do it. And then, you know, if you want to get the focus off of you, do it. Obviously, mm-hmm. the police have issues with what you're saying.
Can
right.
I ask a question, Tricia?
Sure.
Yes.
Tricia, one thing that I had read, Pat, isn't it true that the McCain said that they left the door to unlock, that it was unlocked? Anyone could have came in there, and they said that it was unlocked, and I guess people could sort of see that as they're trying to set up and make it look like someone had came in there and snatched Madeline.
Right. Now, the locked doors is a really big issue, and I have an extreme problem with it. Now, here's one of the difficulties whenever you're looking at people's behavior. I find it extremely difficult to believe that anyone would leave their doors unlocked at night when they're in a location they're not that familiar with, on a corner, on a street corner, where the children, you know, the doors of the house are actually on the street corner, you know, right there for anybody to walk in, to take your kids, molest your kids, rape your kids, steal your stuff. I find it hard to believe you would leave that place with the doors open. Now, having said that, I also wouldn't leave my kids unattended while I went drinking. So maybe it's just the way they behave. However, what I looked at in this was that the McCanns said, all the people said, all the friends said, we locked our doors. The McCanns said they locked their doors until it comes down to that night. Suddenly, they leave a door open. Why, if they were locking the doors the other nights, do they suddenly leave a door open? And they say, oh, so somebody else could check on our kids. Well, up until that point, nobody ever checked on anybody else's kids. The McCanns didn't check on anybody else's kids. So why suddenly that night, oh, this is the night we're going to allow somebody else to check on our kids? It doesn't make a lot of sense. So it's that their pattern has been to lock the doors and check on their children themselves. I believe,
and Pat, I also heard, I was watching a special on E! They did a thing mm-hmm. about shocking crimes, and the Madeline McCann case was featured on there, and there was something about some controversy, the way the police questioned Kate McCann, and they had Nancy Grace was on there, and she was... She said that the police should be ashamed. I forgot exactly what the police did, but what did they do that was controversial that could be considered unethical by the way they questioned Kate?
I didn't particularly see that. I mean, you know, some people aren't as graceful. You know, I mean, you know, you got to admit, some detectives are a little harsher, especially when they think you're hiding something. I'm not saying being interrogated by the police is particularly pleasant. I don't think it started out that way. You know, in the beginning, the police were looking for a stranger. That's why Robert Murat became a suspect, and he became an arguido. And some people really say, oh, you know, they tried to pin it on Robert Murat. Well, you know, if you're looking for a stranger abduction, it was not a bad choice. I have to admit it. I would look at him, too. He was a little bit odd. He lived right nearby, which is where I would suspect anybody who abducted Madeline would be living fairly nearby. He was lurking around and, you know, making himself, okay, I'll help translate. He was hanging around the police investigation. He was easy to look at. He was I can't blame them for looking at him. And I find it still very interesting that the McCanns are very sympathetic toward Murat and say, you know, he was so unfairly treated. You know, I don't know too many families who, there's a guy who could possibly have taken their child, even if the police couldn't prove it, who would not still maybe be a little suspicious and, you know, think maybe that guy did do it, and the police just couldn't prove it. You know, I find it real interesting that they're able to dismiss him so easily as a suspect, because he would certainly be one of the better suspects.
Well, unless the police, you know, have they cleared him already, or is he still considered a suspect?
Well, you know, I guess the way, you know, it's kind of interesting the way, I don't think they cleared him.
Right, but you know what I mean. They don't ever officially clear anybody,
but
you know.
He was a suspect. He became an unsuspect. I don't know that it means he couldn't become a suspect again.
Right. Well,
I think the problem is they're looking at the McCanns, and that's basically where they're at.
Right.
The case has been shelved, and they're looking at the McCanns still.
I'm going to play devil's advocate, may I? Please share
sure.
for a moment, Pat.
Sure.
You know, if the McCanns were really involved, why wouldn't they turn to this suspect and say, yes, he did it. He did it, like the Ramseys were blaming everybody. You know, to me, it seems
right.
like they're just being honest and saying, you know, yeah, this guy didn't do it either. But here's one thing I want to talk to you about that I found compelling.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you would have asked me, if I would have looked at this case before Elizabeth Smart, I would have probably said, yeah, the parents did it. After
right.
Elizabeth, I'm wide open here. Okay, now
mm-hmm.
there are, from what I understand, there are some witnesses who have come forward to say they had seen a man hanging around the McCann apartment. One person even claimed that he leaned over the wall, okay? Now, don't you think that it is very likely that if there was a guy hanging around, there's reports of this man carrying a child down the street, why couldn't that be as logical as anything else, rather than the McCanns just all of a sudden up and killing their child? To me,
no, I don't think they up. No, first of all, wait a minute. I don't think they up and killed their child.
Okay.
I don't think so. Even if I say the evidence might lead me to believe Madeline died in that apartment, I don't think they up and killed their child.
It was an accident.
No, I think they love Madeline.
Mm-hmm.
I think they that was. You know, I don't think anything. I believe the evidence points to most likely an accident in the apartment that was covered up. That's what I believe the evidence most likely points to. And again, this is a theory, so I'm not saying this is what happened. Why couldn't it be something else? Well, here's the rule for anything. Yes, it can always be something else. I mean, we could say that again for every case. Well, maybe the husband didn't do it. Maybe it was her ex-boyfriend. Maybe it was the mailman. Maybe it was, but there's always things that are more logical than other things, no matter what. And do we sometimes have an anomaly? Yes, we do. I always try to remember this girl's name. I don't know why I just forget. Okay, Levi, help me out. The little girl was killed by the church woman.
That was the case in Florida, Sandra Cantu.
Sandra Cantu.
Sandra Cantu, that is an anomaly. I mean, everybody was shocked. Like, say what? She was sexually assaulted by the church woman? I mean, you would think this was a male predator, a sex offender. And 99.99% of the time, that's what it would have been. She was unusual. Of course, that means that now because that's happened, you keep your, well, you never know, I'm going to be a woman. You know, you've had that experience being a little bit burned because, you know, we're so surprised by that. But that still doesn't mean the majority of the time it isn't a male predator. So when we look at a case, yes, anything is possible. We have to be careful to look at, like the Casey Anthony case. Anything's possible there, too, but when you take the totality of the evidence, it's not one thing that makes you say, oh, the evidence points towards maybe the McCanns are involved. It's not one thing. It's the totality of the evidence
mm-hmm.
that says, I think this theory may be more possible than that theory. So I think, yes, so there may be somebody, okay, so somebody says some creepy dude was looking around and looked over their wall. So first of all, who are these somebodies? You know, was this guy really, you know, doing anything? Maybe there's some guy glanced over the wall because he lost his ring over the wall, or maybe he was the guy was thinking about burglaring the place and he looked over the wall. Who knows who this guy was? Maybe somebody made that crap up. You know, and maybe after people get excited, they start seeing everything. Oh yeah, there was this guy and there's this guy and this guy gets crazy. So could there have been somebody? Yes, there could have been. But there's all this other evidence, and that's the thing. When I start weaving it together, that's why I wrote the book the way I did, to say, okay, let's take a look at the crime scene, what went on, let's see what the evidence tends to point, or what seems most logical, like the doors.
Okay, that's why I want to jump in.
Can't let the doors open on one night? Yes,
I
want to
jump in. I
want to
jump in here. From what I understand about the doors, the McCanns claim to have left the patio door unlocked in all of their statements. They said, yeah, they left it unlocked. They just did that night. And you know,
yeah,
they.
Yeah, that's true.
And so.
That night. I'm not talking about. I'm not saying
okay.
they changed a statement. I'm
right.
saying, why would they, this one night, decide to do this? And also, in the original statement, they didn't go through the door. The original statements, Jerry goes around to the front and unlocks the door. So does Kate. So if the back door is open, why don't they just go through the darn thing? Why did they go opening, unlocking the other door? So their statement did change from the first day, for the first interview to the next one. Then they said, oh, no, I went to the back. That did change. But the issue about the doors being locked was supposedly, yes, we locked them, we locked them, we locked them. Oh, that night we didn't lock the back door.
I think
but that's
too.
That's what's weird. Why that one night? Did they suddenly not lock the back door?
Well, and you know what? And maybe if they would have locked it, maybe she wouldn't be missing. I mean, you know, if
this
that
is possible. This
and,
is possible.
Well, maybe
no.
they would have.
The doors were locked, and that's the problem with this whole case.
So,
remember about the, okay, let's go to the open window. The open window is a really big issue in this case. The, originally, the statement was that, you know, their statement after the Madeline was gone and the, they started making calls back, well, Jerry started making calls back to England, and he said, Madeline's been abducted. The shutters were chimneyed on the window, and basically the guy came in the window and stole Madeline. All right. Then eventually the police did their investigations and said there was no sign that the windows, you know, the shutters had been chimneyed, no sign anybody had been through the windows. The only fingerprint there was Kate's. Now, I heard this before, and one of the reasons I never wrote the profile before is because I was waiting to hear from Kate because I never knew what she was saying about anything.
Mm-hmm.
I thought when she wrote her book, and she wrote a book called Madeline, fairly recently it came out, and I thought for sure we were going to see something in there like the police botched the investigation. They did a terrible job on those windows, and they, you know, that guy came through the window, but the police say, you know, they messed it up when they did the investigation and said that nobody came through, but that's not true. This is not what Kate wrote. Kate wrote nothing that the police did was incorrect about those windows. She basically said nobody did come through the window. She admits that. Now what she says is it seems that perhaps the man came through an open door or had a copy of the key. For some reason, he opened the window of the bedroom, maybe with the idea that he'd go out the window with Madeline, which makes no sense because the front door is on the same exact side of the apartment. So, you know, why go through a window? We can go through a door. So suddenly the guy didn't come in through the window. So now we have a problem. If the guy didn't come through the window, how did he get in the house? Well, see, there's a very useful reason for a open back door.
Devil's advocate here, may I? Devil's advocate, can I just jump in real quickly?
Sure.
Here? Okay, supposing somebody came in through the patio door, all right? Maybe they opened the window and looked outside to see what was going on.
No.
Maybe they had an accomplice. I mean, there's a million things
makes,
that could have happened. That's
no,
just
what you're doing is you're pointing out. Yes, there are always. This is what I'm saying. There's always a scenario, and that's what happened with the Casey Anthony trial. That's why jury let her go because
right.
Baez came up with. You never know. Maybe this could happen. Well, maybe it was Martians, but it's not. Well, here we have a guy comes in the back door. But let's look at it this way. All right, you only have so much time in that house. All right, you want to get in there, and you want to get the hell out of there. You go in, you grab the kid, and you leave. You do that within a minute. You don't waste your time doing crap that you don't need to do. Those windows, you would have to open the windows, and you have to open the shutters, which make a lot of noise, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to do two of those motions. What's the point when you can just open the door and peep out? Or you can just run back out the door you came in. People don't do a whole bunch of other things that make no damn sense. Okay, so that's one of the things we have to get away from. We have to go to what makes sense. And again, with the totality of all the other information, not just, you know, one thing. Again, you can always point out one issue and say, see, this could be this. Well, yes, it could, but then we have 20 other pieces of information that say it all matches together and makes the puzzle look like
Why were the McCanns never charged with neglect? I mean, I think that it seems like a pretty open and shut case if they can't get them for anything else. Neglect, I mean, they have admitted that they left their child alone, unattended, and they said that the doors were unlocked.
You know, I think it was because at that point in the beginning, it seemed like punishment enough to have your child be missing. You know, I think
well,
that's what people
even
have a real hard time charging
people
for a crime when their kid is did or missing.
Even if they did not do anything at all to their daughter, I have
right.
no sympathy for them if they left a child, other children, alone in a hotel room with the door locked. That's stupid. And they're
it
educated
is.
People
yeah.
and they know better. I have zero sympathy for them. Actually, I don't know what happened. I'm like Trisha, but that alone, I think they should have been charged for child neglect. I can understand maybe not charging them right up front because you don't want them to shut up and lawyer up very quickly, but later on down the road, I don't understand why they weren't charged with child neglect.
Well, they aren't there. That's one reason. They fled Portugal.
Let's talk about some of the evidence. To me, one of the biggest pieces of solid evidence is the witness who saw the man carrying a child. why are you laughing?
Evidence.
That to me,
Jane Tanner. To me is one of the worst pieces of evidence that is one of the biggest red flags in this whole, to me, okay, biggest red flags in this whole case. Why? All right. First of all, Jane Tanner, for people who don't know what happened here, Jerry's the father of the children. He supposedly went to make his check on the children about 9:15, okay? So he leaves the restaurant. He goes off to check on the children. Soon after that, Jane Tanner goes and makes her check on the children. And so she goes off, and she sees Jerry standing in the road talking with a fellow named Jeremy. That wasn't one of their friends, but Jeremy and Jerry play tennis together. She sees him in the road. She says, and here's one red flag, he'd already done his check. Well, she couldn't have possibly known whether he had done his check or not because he could have run into Jeremy and started up a conversation and not even gone in yet. So I don't know why Jane says he's already done his check. She couldn't possibly have a clue. But as she is coming, approaching them, she sees a man come out from behind the building at the corner. This is at a corner, coming from where would be the window that we're talking about, Madeline's room. A man walking by, carrying a child in his arms, a little girl, with his arms outstretched, and his kid just kind of lying in his arms. Kind of a weird way to carry a kid, because most people will pick up a kid and throw it against the body and run off with it. You know, you don't walk down the street with your arms outstretched with a kid lying on him. But, okay, that's her description of him. Now, it turned out, which was kind of odd, I think, because Jeremy said he never saw Jane Tanner. So the police can't figure out why, and Jerry said he didn't either, why if Jane saw them, they didn't see her. And they didn't see this man either. So we have to say Jane Tanner's the only one that saw this man. Now think about this. Man comes out of the window, okay?
She didn't say he came.
How did he get out of there? Huh?
She didn't say she saw him come out of the window.
No. He just comes from behind the building.
Right.
The theory being he came out the window or the door, but however he got out of the building with Madeline. Now, here's a guy. Now, when you come out of that building, it's kind of, there's a little wall there. The door is kind of recessed so you can peek out and look around, see if anybody's around. And then you can peek around the corner and see if anybody's in the street. And you can decide to go to the left or to the right. If you go to the left, you go down by that wall on the back side of the building, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go to the right where two men are standing right in the street talking. Now, I don't know, but if I just kidnapped somebody's kid out of that building, I don't think I would have been crossing that street with two men standing there talking. I think I'd be going the other way. So that's kind of odd. Again, now here's what really, there's two reasons this really red flags me. Okay, so Jane says she saw this, all right? Night goes on. Kate comes back, 10 o'clock, does her check, and Madeline is gone. Kate's going crazy. And Jane runs into Kate right after that. As Kate's racing around saying, Where's Madeline? Jane runs into her, does not tell her she saw a man going out of the apartment with a little girl.
But
she did tell
the police, and she told everyone else. Maybe she just didn't want to
upset
her right
then. Later on she did that. But, you know, to me it boggles the mind. Kate is looking for a child, and you have a clue right away that man might have taken that child and gone down that road. You're not going to immediately tell Kate, I saw some guy coming by an apartment with a child, but it might have been Madeline. She went that way. She never tells her right then and there so they can go try to find the guy or go try to find Madeline. She waited.
Well, I thought
hours.
She told the police right. I mean, like immediately. I thought she told everybody else immediately.
The police
just
weren't
not
there
paid.
Immediately.
But didn't she
no,
tell everybody else?
There's a downtime. There's almost an hour downtime between when Kate she runs into Kate and when the police show up. We don't even know she told the police immediately. I don't know if I buy that story immediately.
Well, but didn't she tell everybody
particular.
Else just not Kate because she didn't want to freak
no,
her
she
out?
She didn't
That's
tell everybody else. No, no, I don't know where you're getting that from. She did not tell everybody else. She supposedly mentioned it to one other person later on. Now, you have to understand that this is a story that's coming out later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This is a story that could well have been, I'm not saying this is true. This is a story that's coming out later. We don't know that the friends did not have a discussion about what might be said, what might be, if this were a cover-up, what might we do. Now, lots of things can be said later, but we don't know that it really actually happened as it is said.
Right.
We're just assuming that maybe they're telling the truth. We don't know that. But
so
what strikes me completely bizarre is that you wouldn't tell your friend that you saw somebody running off with their kid. And that Kate later on says, oh, I don't have any anger toward her at all. I feel sorry for the burden she had to carry. I'm sorry. I'd be really pissed off if somebody saw somebody running out of my house with my kid, or somebody who could be my kid, and they didn't bother to tell me and let my kid go off with some sex predator for an hour. I'd be livid. I think that's very, very bizarre.
You know,
and another thing that's real important about that sighting, that's really important about the sighting. There's another sighting at 10 o'clock near the beach, another fellow carrying a little girl in a more normal position toward the beach. Immediately, the McCann said couldn't have been that person. It only could be James Hanner's man that she saw at 9:15. Now, if you look at the comings and goings of the people, there is no reason if Madeline were kidnapped at, let's say, 9:45, why that couldn't be the man at 10 o'clock. Why did they constantly say it couldn't be that other man at 10 o'clock? It makes no sense because they could still be the perfectly good kidnapping theory and kidnapped at 9:45 and the guy took her down toward the beach. Why not? Well, the only reason I can think of is because at 9:15, when Jane Tanner had her sighting, Jerry McCann has an alibi.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason I can think that they're so adamant it couldn't be him. Now, later on, they're willing to say, okay, later on, they said, okay, maybe it could have been the man at the beach, but only if it's the same man that Jane saw. In other words, at 9:15, she saw him, and then he ducked into some place for 45 minutes, and then he was seen again at the beach. Later on, they were grudgingly willing to say, maybe that's it, but only if it's the same man. I cannot think of a very good reason why it couldn't be that's the kidnapper, you know, kidnapping Madeline at 9:45 and ending up there at 10, except for somebody's alibi.
I have a question about.
I wish somebody would come up with one. I can't.
I have a question about your timeline here briefly, okay? This has got me perplexed. Your timeline has Jerry McCann being spotted by an Irish family about a half a mile from the McCann's apartment at 10. Is that correct?
No.
That's not correct. Okay.
No. Who wrote
okay.
that one? No. No, a man was spotted near the beach at 10 o'clock with a child.
And that bucket, but you're not saying, okay, I see. I'm sorry. I thought you said it was Jerry
McCann. I'm not saying it's Jerry McCann. What I'm saying is that one problem with our timeline, and people who are very, very pro the McCanns will adamantly say there's a thousand witnesses that put everybody in these specific places at these specific times, and Jerry McCann was definitely in the restaurant at 10 o'clock when Kate said this, and everybody's got the specifics, exact times on things.
Mm-hmm.
And even the friends have exact times, which makes me kind of laugh. They'll say, like, for example, I went to check on the child at 9:12, and then, you know, then we checked on the child again at 9:27. I'm thinking, I'm drinking wine?
Yeah.
I don't know that I know the time so well. You know, usually you do something like, oh, God, we better go check on the kids.
Right, right.
You don't usually, you know exactly what the minute is. So it's almost like everybody sat down and said, what time should we got to make sure our timing is right here. It's just too exact. I mean, I just find that kind of peculiar. I think they should be saying, well, we're kind of drinking, you know. So, you know, we went back and forth. We checked. I think I checked around this time, and I probably went, I don't know, maybe I went at 9, maybe I went at 9:15. I can't quite remember, you know. I don't know. The timelines are really messed up.
I think that's
something I would like to know more. I would like more clarity on myself. But clearly, the detective on the case, Detective Amaral, had problems with the timelines himself. So I think a lot of people who are saying there's absolutely no way the timelines lock them in, I don't believe that is true.
Let's talk about what you think happened briefly. What happened? Where did Jerry take his daughter? What happened? You talk about them visiting the corpse. Go through that timeline of exactly how you
think.
Now, wait a
minute.
I'm not
saying that's what happened.
Never
said that happened.
I know. In your theory, in your hypothesis, tell me what you think.
One hypothesis.
Tell me how you think this went down.
Well, I do believe that, you know, what the evidence most supports is one, at least a good hypothesis that it supports, is that Madeline died in the apartment, because there is no evidence, and this is absolutely true, there's no evidence of an abduction. There is no evidence of an abduction. The only evidence we have, as you could say, is that Madeline is missing. But that's not evidence of an abduction. That just means she's missing. We just don't know what happened to her. So there's no evidence of an abduction. Now, there was the issue of the dogs hitting on decomposition and blood in the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The one dog hit on behind the sofa for decomposition, and the other dog hit on blood behind the sofa. Now, the people are very, very pro-McCann, and this is what Kate McCann will say and Jerry McCann will say. It's like all junk science. The dogs were complete junk science, and it's just ludicrous. And the supporters will say that's completely correct. It's ludicrous. So, therefore, there's no proof that anybody died in the apartment. There's no proof there's any blood in the apartment. It's all silliness. And there's a really interesting point about this, which I did not make in the book. The dogs also hit on the McCann's rental vehicle, which was rented some month, at least about around a month afterwards. I don't know, I'm going to miss the exact day here. And somebody will say, it was exactly this many days, and my mind doesn't work that well at the moment. I'm trying to remember that detail. But it was about a month later. And the dogs hit on the car. Now, think about this. If you were trying to get the dogs to fake this stuff, making the dogs find decomp in the apartment, that makes sense, you know, because you're trying to railroad them, right? Let's have Madeline die in the apartment. So let's railroad them by having them find some cadaver stuff in there. That works. Why in God's earth would you have the dogs hit on the car that they rented a month after the child died? Wouldn't that just make you look stupid more than would help you out? Because it's pretty bizarre.
Right.
That would mean they had to have moved the body a month later. Why not just, you know, if you were going to fake it, you wouldn't even bother with that. You just say the kid died in the apartment, they must have buried the body someplace.
So are you suggesting that they went and buried her somewhere and then dug her back up and brought her out? I mean, I'm confused.
What happened? Well, one theory is that if the child died in the apartment, there was an attempt to cover up and they moved her someplace.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the first time that somebody has moved a body someplace and then, when a search is going to ensue in that area, freak out because they believe the body will be discovered. And we'll take that opportunity to move the body to yet another location so the search team doesn't find it. There was a search team. One of the places I believe that she could have been placed, if this were true, is up on the, it's called the Roja Negra. It's the cliff that overhangs, and it's where Tate and Jerry used to go running up in the cliff. It's a nice isolated location. It's near the beach, and it's kind of, and then they went running there. So people tend to dump bodies where they're familiar. So it could have been, if they did do something, it could have been a choice. But I've always wondered why they would move a body if they did that. But it turned out that about the time they went to Huelva, Spain, the police were about to search that particular location. So it, it was rather interesting. I thought, well, that could explain it if that was what happened. So I don't know if that is what happened, but one wonders why the dogs did hit on the apartment in the car, unless you want to say that's complete junk science.
Right.
I tend to think it is not junk science because, not again, when we look at all the evidence, you have to look at, does it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it does make sense. As one theory. Now, again, you can't prove anything until you get to court, and sometimes you can't even prove it then. At least,
exactly.
You know, that's why a person is not, you know, they're not convicted of anything unless you can prove it. So, you know, it takes a lot. It's going to take a lot more investigation in this case. Unfortunately, the case has been shelved.
So, but
I know a lot of people out there screaming, oh, no, Kate wants the kid. That case opened up against Scotland Yard is going to get involved. And supposedly, I've heard this number thrown around. So, what have you heard this, Levi? Or Tricia? It's like £3.5 million to be spent on this investigation. I'm like, you're going to spend almost, I think it's like $5 million U.S. dollars.
Right.
$5 million U.S. dollars looking for one child? Where? Why? How? I mean, what are you even spending the money on? I can't even figure it out. But
I don't know.
Just because somebody is saying, you know, we want this case taken looked at by Scotland Yard, doesn't mean Scotland Yard is going to look at it from the very beginning.
Right.
I don't know what's going on in that. I think if they really wanted the case looked at properly, they could return to Portugal and say, unshelve the case. I'm going to answer. I was all bent out of shape when you know, because I was so angry at the time. I want to come back to Portugal. I want to do the reenactment. I want to answer those questions, and I want to get the show on the road. I want you to find my kid. And I also think it would behoove them in doing so to also be willing to admit it could be a local sex predator, because it seems to me like they spend no time even considering the fact that she could have been taken by a local sex predator. And that bothers
right.
me tremendously, because that's the most likely scenario if they had nothing to do with it. The most likely scenario is a local sex predator.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, in your hypothesis, correct me if I'm wrong, do you include them bringing Madeline back to England, or in a backpack, or what was
that? No, I kind of made on a blog, I said, what this ludicrous theory. I was trying to point out that we want to keep all our options open, that one possibility is that she could have been returned to England one way or the other. And I pointed out that people have been able to smuggle lots of things into England.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're also driving, you're flying on private jets, or you're coming into England with an entourage, you know, sometimes you can just walk through customs and nobody pays any attention to anything. And then, of course, you don't have to always take a plane. You can go by other methodologies, or you can pass the child off to somebody and have that child take the child back.
Why?
The reason I bring that up as a possibility, if they were involved, is
mm-hmm.
because people are much more comfortable sometimes when they know where the child is and it's on their own property, or it's
mm-hmm.
on the relative's property, because you can't go on the property without a search warrant, right?
Right.
So sometimes people bury people they've killed or have had accidental deaths or whatever the reason is, the ones they don't want to be investigated, they bury the child or the other person on their own property because, yeah, without that search warrant, nobody's walking on your property to find that person. But then you
mm-hmm.
can say, look everywhere in the world, because you don't have to worry about her ever being found.
Right.
I
don't know. That just sounds really creepy. And you've been to London through Heathrow and everything. If they did take the airport or an airline, it would be hard because they have all of those, you know, animal dogs food dogs there sniffing to see.
Do you know
how
much meat gets through there? That's one of the things I pointed out. There was
it's a big problem.
Huge
big problem.
Quantities of meat
yeah.
going through the airport. They were
That's
smuggling
bizarre.
Meat straight through Heathrow.
Oh, would just seem so creepy to me. Okay, let's talk about
there's a lot of creepiness. I mean, when you take a look, it's important to look at desperate situations.
Mm-hmm.
When people are desperate, when you look at people who cut people's bodies up, how could you do that?
Right.
People are desperate. You're living in an apartment. You just killed your girlfriend. You're on the third floor. You got no car. What are you going to do? So you cut her up, put her in suitcases. I mean,
yes.
That's pretty disgusting and creepy.
That is, and desperate. It does
like
happen.
That.
Well,
it happens, and we can't look at it that way.
Let's talk about how in your hypothesis, you think she died by was it an accident or perhaps a drug overdose? What do you think happened in this particular hypothesis?
Well, there is a good reason to believe it could be it has some kind of drugs. And the reason
mm-hmm.
being is because Kate McCann herself and Jerry McCann say they believe their children, all three of them, may have been drugged by whoever took Madeline.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm looking at going back in time and looking at all kinds of, you know, children who've been kidnapped. I don't know of any kidnapper who goes in there and tries to get some kind of medication into the children
right.
before they take them. I mean, sometimes they use chloroform or something like that, because you can stick it over their face and run away with the child. But to do some, you know, to feed them some kind of drugs or to make them drink it, you wake them up to make them drink drugs, and you know, it's just silly. I mean, mm-hmm. you don't do that. And so you have to wonder, why does she insist that her kids only have been drugged?
I've never heard that. So she really does say that? I mean, she really believes it?
Yes.
Kate really believes that? Really?
Well, one thing that happened was when they came back, Kate was, you know, flipping out because Madeline was gone. She was crying and screaming, of course, and that was normal. I think she really was. I think she was very upset.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, her child was, something had happened to her child. And those twins slept like logs and did not wake up. Now, we all know some children just sleep like logs.
Yeah.
So that's not an issue. But she became concerned enough about her children at some point to check their breathing because they were sleeping too heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought they might have been sedated by the kidnapper. Well, I'm sorry, but if I think my kids have been sedated by a kidnapper, I'm shaking them a heck awake.
Right.
To make sure they're okay. Or if I was really worried, take them to a hospital, have them, you know, checked out. She did neither of those things.
How were they tested?
Did all the
children? I thought I read where they were tested to see if
yes,
they had digested any drugs, and it came
after
back negative.
Way later when it was
okay.
Moot, you know what I mean? Yeah, way later. But you wonder why she would even think that. Why should we even go there? But the most logical theory is yes, the children, because Madeline the night before this all happened had been crying, and she said her brother was crying for like over
mm-hmm.
an hour. And mommy, why didn't you come? And Kate states this as well, so it's not like just a rumor. Somebody said that that's what was said.
Mm-hmm.
So she cried, and her mother didn't come for a long, long time. And yet they go out the next night and do the same thing, which kind of boggles my mind. But one wonders, did they do something to take care of the crying problem, to calm
mm-hmm.
the children down? Now, if Madeline ingested, you know, whether she was could have overdosed on something to take, there's just too much medication, or whether she was just, you know, groggy from the medication, or whether she got into some more medication, who knows? But the theory that the police had was that in whatever condition she was in, she climbed up on the sofa, looked out the window, and fell
mm-hmm.
behind the sofa. And it is a hard hard tile stone kind of floor. And you know, normally kids just bounce. But you know
yeah.
there are those times that kids fall in a horrible
position. That's pretty awful.
And die.
Yep.
And yeah, or she could have asphyxiated in a positional asphyxiation. She was groggy and fell into some weird position. She could have aspirated vomit. There's a lot of possibilities, but the dogs say that child died behind the sofa. That's what the dogs say. You know, they
mm-hmm.
found decomposition behind the sofa and some blood.
In the beginning of this case, and wasn't there something found in the car that Kate and Jerry McCann had rented?
Yes. Yeah, they were supposedly found decomp in the car. Decomp and then some fluids, and they said it was, you know, most likely. It gets a little confusing here because people are arguing over the report.
Don't tell me it was hamburger meat.
Yeah, they supposedly found something that was DNA that would match Madeline in the trunk. And then McCann said something to the effect of, oh, no, we just we had the diapers of the children in the trunk, used diapers in the children's trunk. And then
DNA come back that it wasn't, they couldn't match it?
I believe it came out. I'm getting confused. Now I have to think about this.
Yeah,
this
I think
is where some of the confusion comes in. This one I kept away from because it was such
confusing
stuff, and I was like, I don't know who to believe on this one. You know, at the moment, I'd like to do a little bit, you know, stronger study and see the paperwork myself.
When you say, I think it's online, if I'm not mistaken. I believe the report is online. But I could be wrong.
Reports. I say there's a number of reports, and then the question is. No, who did the testing, and how reliable is it, and that kind of stuff. People also don't understand that. You know, sometimes DNA testing is a little questionable.
Well, that's true. Now let me get back to the dogs. You said something, and I want to make sure that I'm clear on this. You said they hit on decomp and blood. They didn't find anything. Well, what do you mean they hit on decomp and blood? Do you mean just
they
that
found
they're
the dogs? Dog is able to recognize a location where there is a body that has decomposed
mm-hmm.
to some extent. And the other dog is able to hit on an area that has had blood at that location.
Okay, okay. And was it an absolute strong, and you're right, that's, that alone in itself, although it is compelling, certainly isn't, you know, the end all because they can make mistakes and whatever. But
no, and I don't think in a court. I mean, it's one of those. It's one of those science. Well, you know, some people say it isn't a science. That it's junk science. Kind of like the smell testing thing they were doing, the chloroform thing they were doing in Casey Anthony's case, and they had, you know, remember the guy came in from the body farm and
right.
said, oh, you know, when I smelled that. I mean, it's newer, and in this particular case, the dog I spoke to, it supposedly hadn't been wrong in like 200 times or something.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I mean, it's not one thing in isolation. I keep having to say that over and over again because if I took anything in isolation, I can say, well, that's probably junk or that's probably
right.
junk. But it's everything together that there's just so many concerning issues that there's so many red flags that just stand out. That's what so many of the things I pointed out, things that really bothered me that were done.
Do you think that the friends at the restaurant are in on the cover-up?
Well, they would have to be, if this is what happened, they would have had to try to help their friends. A lot of people can't understand how this would have gone down. But here's where I think this could be true. And this, again, is a theory, but this is what something can happen with friends. Let's say you're really good friends, right? You're buddies, you know, you're on vacation, and you all do the same thing, which is leave the kids alone in the room. You're all taking the same risks. When something happened to Madeline, the others are going to say is, oh, my God, that could have happened to me, too. Oh, my God, I did the exact same thing. We're guilty of neglect as well. We neglected our kids, too. So we're not any different than they are, only they got unlucky, you know. And let's say it did happen that way. Now the McCanns are panicked. Everything is, oh, my God, you know, what's going to happen to us? You know, they're going to charge us with homicide. They're going to charge us with manslaughter. They're going to charge us with child neglect. They're going to take our kids away from us. We're going to lose our medical license. Our whole lives are going to be destroyed. Now, it is possible that because there was such emotional stuff going on that they said, look, you know, please just help us out. You know, we don't want to go to jail in a foreign country. We don't want kids taken away. What about Sean and Emily? You know, please help us out. And the friends say, okay, well, we'll just say, you know, Jane could say, I'll say I saw some guy. And the other one says, okay, I'll say I checked on your kids. We say you were at the restaurant at that time. That's all they have to do, and they think they're just helping out. Like, you know, we're not really doing much lying. We're just going to say, you know, I came and checked on the kids that were there at that time, and, you know, you came back to the restaurant at this time. That's it. They're not moving a body. They're not getting involved in either way. There's, like, little tiny, small lies. Now, here's the problem. If you actually agree to do that, right, in the moment of the emotion, time goes on. What are you going to do? Do you suddenly rat everybody out, rat out the McCanns?
Well,
rat out yourself. You know what
you,
I mean?
You know so much more about human nature than I do, Pat. And I'm not trying to challenge you because it wouldn't be a challenge. You just
But and by the way, I want to point out there's a woman who has. Oh, I don't know if she's a woman or male, but I always thought it was female because it's female now. There's a woman who has posted on the internet, Jael. She has posted Jael's rebuttal to Pat Brown. And she's gone through and you know, stated all the reasons she thinks I'm wrong. And I think she's taken some things out of context, you know, of what I said and why I said it. So I think, you know, some of that, you know, you have to read my profile to know what the context was and then read her rebuttal. And I want to say right up front, I don't object to her rebuttal at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think that she has just as much right to write a rebuttal about what my theory is as I have a right to write a theory. And I think side by side, this is useful because it you know, encourages discussion. People say, hey, what's right? What do we think could have happened? You know, I don't see any problem with it. So some people think I'm really, like, really upset because this woman wrote a rebuttal, and I'm like, works for me. I don't have an issue with it. I believe in freedom of speech.
Well, that's,
you know,
I'm glad
I'm
to hear
forth,
you say
so.
That. That shows your integrity, Pat. I think that's very cool. But I just don't think 8 people would do this because I think somebody in that group, and I don't know, were they all close? I don't know. While Jerry's running around trying to get rid of the body, that somebody in that group would just say, this is baloney, you know, this is crap. I'm not going to perjure myself. I'm not going to get involved in this. I don't see 8 people coming together and doing that.
A lot of people don't.
Yeah.
You're not alone, Tricia.
I have a problem
with
that.
A lot of people think that wouldn't happen. I do believe it can happen. I don't have an issue with that at all. I think I say these what they might have said was very minor. I think they might have said the very minor thing. And once you get the ball rolling, I think then people just don't know how to back off of it. And they're like, well, I don't want to go to jail either. I don't want to rat people out. Then they're going to charge me with something. And time just goes on. You just kind of get stuck into your story. I understand where it seems like it. Oh, wow, that's just impossible. There's another thinking here, and you might agree with this as well. Some people say if Jeremy and Kate were involved in this in any way, you would think they would just go away quietly. They wouldn't start a big campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people say this, they don't believe it. They'd be quiet people. But I have also seen guilty people go out in front of cameras, speak up. I didn't do it. And do all kinds of stuff that you would not expect them to do when they were guilty. So
it's interesting.
I've seen enough human nature to know that I can't trust as being something that completely eliminates somebody, in my opinion.
It's interesting that everybody can look at the exact same thing that's black and white and come away with a totally different interpretation. So, Pat, I thank you for explaining all of this because I had some questions. I do want to say, though, because this is kind of important to me that I discovered this. Yes, the McCanns have not taken a polygraph, but they don't give polygraphs in Europe.
They don't have to take one. I'm not saying they have. They don't have to take one. All I'm saying is, it would behoove them to do it,
mm-hmm.
just because it would. They say, look, it isn't a requirement. Our countries don't do it, but I'd like to do it anyway because people suspect that we're liars. So let's just do it.
Right.
I don't have anything to hide. Let's do it. There's a lot of things they don't have to do. Like, Kate had the right to have a lawyer. She had the right not to answer those questions. But it doesn't make you look good.
Right, exactly.
So that's my concern is if you really, really want the police to back off and to say they're really looking for that child that's been abducted, I would think you should do everything. Make sure they look that direction.
Well, they could have already
really,
taken a poll.
I find that strange behavior.
It's a possibility that they could have already taken a polygraph because they could hire a private polygrapher. They could have taken the polygraph. They could have signed confidentiality agreements with their attorney, and they could have failed. Because I think if they would have passed the polygraph, they would have been showing it around saying, Pat Brown, you're wrong. All of these people on the internet who think we may have had something to do with this are suspicious of us. And anyway, you're wrong. Look at here. So they could have taken one. We don't know if they did not.
That's
true. But I never trust the private one. So yeah, but you're right. They probably would have said that. But it's just one of many things, Tricia. Too. I mean, it's like the evidence. It's not just about one thing. It's about many things. It's not just about one thing that they could do. It's about the many things that they could do that would, I just think, if they're innocent of being involved in anything, the handling of this has been poor, in my opinion, from the beginning. I wrote about that for 4 years on the blog. So it drove me nuts. Every time I saw them, I'm like, either you're guilty of something or you're just being really stupid. You're getting really, really bad advice.
Yeah.
Like Nicole Obama in her eye, the whole campaign showing that the distorted eye, distorted pupil, that the defect in her eye, that was a big campaign thing. Well, hey, if you want to make sure your kid is dead, that's a good way to do it. Because if I'm a kidnapper and you put that stuff out and point out her eye like that, I'm going to kill that kid.
And see, I would think that just the opposite, that they wouldn't, we have to put information out there, we'll never find them.
Certain kinds of information that will get your kid killed, and that's one of them that will do it because it's so specific. You can't hide the kid with anything because I think he's getting in the way.
I see what you're
saying. It would scare a kidnapper immediately into doing that. I mean, I might do that later. I might try that kind of campaign later on, but in the beginning, I would be doing. Yeah, I know a lot of people. I think unfortunately, probably don't. Most people are dead. That's why it doesn't really make any difference.
Right.
And you're trying to find the killer. Not just to find your kid alive. You want to find the person who killed your child or your daughter or son or whatever. But yeah, there's a lot of things I say that they've handled. My mouth is just dropped open when I've watched and I think, who is advising these people?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just. I mean, One could say they're very successful because they've made millions off of this fund. I mean, they've really got, I'm not sure how much money, so let me not over exaggerate, but they've made a lot of money on that fund. And I don't know what that fund has done to find Madeline. So maybe they have been successful in that. They've been successful in all the law, with Carter Ruck, which is their lawyers, they've been able to shut down people from saying anything. People are terrified of Carter Ruck. They've given cease and desist letters to blogs. Bloggers mm-hmm. have given cease and desist letters to. And of course, they shut Amaral down, and now his appeal, he's won on that, I believe. But they got an injunction on his book. Now they've gone to Carter Ruck has gone to Amazon to have had my book removed. So mm-hmm. McCann's are trying to shut down anybody who might suggest that it wasn't an abduction,
mm-hmm.
and they're spending a lot of time doing that. I think if I were in their shoes again, I'd say, look, you know, we didn't do anything. We're innocent. But I can understand why
mm-hmm.
you might think that. We did neglect our children. We left our children alone and unattended. That was terribly wrong of us. We were so wrong. We were
mm-hmm.
selfish. We didn't consider what would happen. We were terribly selfish. And there is no evidence of an abduction, just that Madeline is gone. So I understand why these people suspect us. I don't harbor any ill will toward them. I understand they're going to talk. They're going to go over the evidence like crazy because they can't understand how this all happened. I get it. But I'm going to do everything again to clear our names so we can go out there and find who we believe kidnapped Madeline. That's what I would have done instead of suing everybody, shutting everybody down, and
mm-hmm.
saying everybody who dares to say anything is a horrible human being. I think their behavior is kind of terrible. You know, and if I were their advisor, I'd say, you know, I wouldn't act that way. But that's the way I think about that. And I said, maybe somebody has advised them differently. Maybe other people view it differently. And that's, like you say, we can sometimes look at things from a very different point of view.
That is absolutely true. Absolutely. You know, I might look at it and go, well, you know, they want their child to, they think their child is alive and maybe they don't want, I mean, I wouldn't sue anybody. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't. But I'm trying to look at it from their point of view. Maybe they think, you know, we need to be talking about her being alive and not dead. But I don't know. You
yeah.
very well.
But they may think that, but that doesn't, you know, just because you've had a misfortune doesn't mean you should be able to control the entire world.
Well, you're right.
Had more. This child has been seen by more people. She's the most well-known missing child in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
This child has had more money than almost any. I don't know another child has had this much money. Looking for her. So I think she's the most looked for child in the world, the most financially supported missing child in the world. So they have nothing to complain about. There's a ton of children out there. We don't know their faces.
Absolutely.
No
I agree with that.
Nothing.
Yes.
And so it's like the continuing, one of the things that the McCanns come across is being extremely self-centered, very, very
mm-hmm.
narcissistic, selfish in a way. Now, I understand it's your child and you want to do that, but I've seen a lot of other people out there. You take a look at Natalie's mother, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's working for other children. John
yeah.
Walsh worked for other children. Mark Class is working for other children. They do love their children, want their children found, or want their guy prosecuted. But
mm-hmm.
they didn't just ignore every other child in the world and think everybody has to pay attention to their child and their child only. I didn't see that coming from any of them.
Right. They are. That group is an amazing group of people. You know what? I can't believe we've taken up almost 2 hours, and I still have two quick topics for you guys, okay, real quickly here. Sleuther on the side has a question for you, Pat. And Levi, I need you to weigh in on this because this is really interesting. It's totally, totally different direction here, okay? Keeping kids safe from pedophiles is an ever-evolving responsibility of parents. And Sleuther on the side asks you, Pat, as a professional profiler, what are your thoughts on public schools allowing open access to school websites? Many websites list field trip schedules going as far as naming trip locations, teachers, and times. How can this fit into a pedophile standard operating procedure? In other words, giving out all this information on a public website, could that help a pedophile find a child, perhaps?
Well, you know, it could. I think our bigger problems are more with just pedophiles just being in your neighborhood and being able to just simply grab your kid.
Mm-hmm.
I think we don't want to get to the point where we can't even function, you know, in a society. Mostly we need to stop leaving our children alone. And,
yeah.
And you know, I always point this same story out every time. I said, well, my my boys wanted to walk to the park by themselves. I said, you can walk to the park by yourself and you can beat me up.
Yeah. I love it.
When your whole mother can beat you up, you're not ready to be walking to the park.
That's a very good standard
yeah.
to go by.
And that's
yeah.
the kind of thing we need as parents. We got to stop looking for all these other places to do this stuff. We as parents need to start saying, you know, what do we need to do to protect our own children? You know, stop letting our children go on the Internet and just look at any old, you know, do anything they want on the Internet. Have total access to all the Facebook stuff without anybody watching. To go running around the neighborhood to parties and all kinds of stuff that they're getting involved with. We're letting our children way too much free reign, and it's saying we're paying for it. And it's very, very sad, and I'd like to see some of that stuff.
Levi, what do you think about the situation of putting the public information out there on websites?
Well, I think that a pedophile would probably find other ways to get it, even if the school did do that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they probably troll Facebook anyway, and they'll probably be able to find out if there's a field trip going on, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't think that is that big of a deal.
Okay,
right.
we need to wrap it up here. Kimster, are you still with us, my darling?
Yes, I'm still here.
Yay.
What an interesting conversation.
I know. This has been very, very interesting and very helpful. I mean, I've learned a lot about the case tonight. Madeline, I've always called her Madeline. It's Madeline, right?
Well, I think it's Madeline.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think it's pronounced.
It's just been fascinating, and this is the first time we've taken up almost 2 hours, but every week we've been meaning to talk about Tim Miller and EquiSearch, and I keep forgetting, and I'm going to be killed. Literally, I'll be murdered unless I talk about it this week. But Kimster, I'm going to give you the honors. What's going on with Tim Miller, the head of EquiSearch? He goes out there and looks for missing kids, missing people. We love him. What's going on with Tim Miller?
Well, yes, he does. And actually, I believe one of the volunteers in a search actually located someone within this past week. I don't have the name in front of me. I'm sorry, but I do believe they did even locate someone this week. So
mm-hmm.
they do a wonderful job. And we have a very special member that so many people love on Web Sleuth, Steely Dan. He is such a funny guy. Any of you that are not members of Web Sleuth, you guys need to be members and get down in the private forum, because he keeps us laughing down there so much you cannot believe. But he has a very serious thread in the public forum. It's up toward the top. It's about Dateline. And real quickly, we all know what great work Tim Miller does with Tess, and his story would make a great subject for Dateline. Be sure to vote in the Dateline area. Please do a story on Tim Miller, there's a thread in there, and you can vote, and make sure to post a comment, too. And if you can't find the thread in there, there's a link in Steely Dan's signature line, and you can just push there and get right to the thread. So thank you, Steely Dan, and thank you, everybody, for voting.
Yes, thank you, Steely Dan, for putting that up. What maybe I don't think a lot of people know is that Dateline, specifically, comes to Web Sleuth for ideas, as well as many of the other true crime shows. That we even have a special forum for those shows at Web Sleuth, and that is where the Dateline thread is located concerning Tim Miller. So get on there and vote, and let's get Dateline's attention and say, hey, do a story on Tim Miller. We love the guy. We want to see him on there. Well, Levi and Patty. Yes, absolutely.
Hey Trisha. Trisha,
yes.
I was just reading Twitter, and according to Mark DeJame, who is the attorney of Texas EquiSearch, Tim Miller, this is sort of off topic from EquiSearch, but he has said that TMZ has a photograph of Casey Anthony that they will be putting up on their website tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to include the location of wherever Casey Anthony was.
Wow,
that
whoever got that picture of Casey Anthony is making a bundle of money. Let's just hope she's not naked. That's the only thing. Couldn't take it. Okay, so there you go, Levi Page. Breaking news: we're gonna have a picture of Casey Anthony on TMZ with the location, so we'll find out where she is. We knew this was coming. We knew it was coming.
Oh, Trisha, just want to say to people, yes, you can't get my book, which is Profile of the Disappearance of Madeleine McCann. You cannot get that on Amazon anymore because it has been banned by Amazon because of the Carter Ruck lawyers for McCann, so they've taken it off.
But where can you
get
it?
You can't get it at Smashwords, and you can get it at Barnes & Noble, at least for now.
Okay.
So it's $2.99. I recommend people read it because what we've talked about tonight is just that's pieces of it, and I like people to go through the whole process from the beginning so they can kind of see how it unrolls. I want to say unravels. Somebody's going to jump and say, see, your theory unravels. but, again, it is a theory, and I recommend every, you know, people think about these things, and, you know, and it did, and open for discussion.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you so much. And Levi, of course, your show, the Levi Page Show, tell us when it is and what time.
Every Monday and Thursdays. Mondays, we're going to be talking about the crimes in the headline. And then on Thursdays, we're going to be talking about cases that have been in the news but have sort of died down. And we're going to have Pat on to talk more about Madeleine McCann this Thursday. And I've also got in contact with Desiree Young, who is the mother of missing Kyron Horman.
Yeah.
Of
very,
Oregon.
Very good.
And we're hoping to get her on the show soon to talk about the Kyron Horman case because she made some comments on television recently that Terry Horman hated Kyron, and she said that there are writings to prove that. And we're
need to get to the bottom
of
that.
I want to remind everybody too. Thank you, Levi, for saying that. I am in Oregon, and the Kyron Horman case is very dear to my heart, and I will not miss your show. But while you're saying that too, Levi, what's great too, you guys, on Blog Talk Radio is you can actually go on the page we're on right now and subscribe, so you can be reminded. I get reminded about Levi's shows all the time, and you can do that too. You can be reminded about our show and Levi's show.
Absolutely.
Yes. The
okay,
best
well,
shows on Blog Talk Radio.
Absolutely, yes. Well, thank you so much, everybody. I really appreciate it. Pat, we'll have you on again. Levi, of course, we'll have you on again as well. And Kim, sir, thank you for holding down the fort and doing all the work so I can sit back and make it look easy. Thank you, thank you. Okay, everybody, we will be back at our regular time next week, hopefully, unless a lightning bolt
hits
me
storm,
again.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what?
Unless you have another storm take you out.
And that, and it very well could be. And I might be hit by lightning. Who knows?
Oh, no, we don't
happen.
Want that.
Knock on wood. But we will be back.
Well, great. We appreciate everything you do. It's just a fantastic forum that you've been able to put together. And really, it is, I think, the premier one out there. So you've done a great job.
Oh, thank you, Pat. We are a bit biased with that as well. We happen to think it's the very best, but it certainly is the posters and the moderators who do all the hard work on Web Sleuths to make it definitely a hot, rockin' and interesting forum, to say the least. Now, let's see. When will we be back? Sunday. We'll be back at 8 o'clock Eastern and 5 o'clock Pacific on Web Sleuths Radio. Our guests will be... I don't have a clue, but I promise you it'll be very interesting, and we'll see you then. Take care. Good night.
Good night, everyone.